And right now it is time to bring in David Tarachuk and the Media Beat. Of course, David joins us every Friday morning. You will find him with his own website, themediabeat.us, also on Huffington Post, and he's also a television correspondent for PBS, reporting on ethics and belief. Good morning, David.
Well, it's good to be with you. Good to be back on good old radio, broadcast live broadcast radio.
The good news about live broadcast radio, I would like to add, is that it's just normal. I have no, it is. I've been tortured all week by television. I'm now being
to be a torturing medium. It certainly can.
And now I'm being tortured by my screen, which has done a scan for the second day in a row, which it's
your computer screen.
Right. Uh-huh. And it has said now, this is for grown-ups, mind. Malware, blah, blah. Scan complete. Awesome! Exclamation point. No threats.
Aren't you glad you've had a safety scan? For free.
No awesome! Doubt. No threats were detected. And I'm wondering about... I'm wondering about these... I'm old people can take care of themselves. Come sit next to me. But I'm wondering about, for example, the people who this morning have had their Amazon accounts accidentally closed because I just had a whole interaction with Bank of America that I won't bore you with, but that can't use, forget their accounts, they can't turn on their lights because their Alexa doesn't work and their Tinder, their Kindle, their...
Oh, the internet of everything.
Yeah. Huh? And, old people, yeah. Fine, they know what to do. Oh, I have to get up and make my own toast. Younger people.
Or light a candle,
right.
Or whatever. Yes.
And I'm just kind of, and by the way, the youngest of them all are learning how to light candles anyway. It's the middle group that's out there, just totally connected, and it's a wilderness. What do you do?
Well, there's lots of reassuring noises being made. I can't quite believe the attempt at reassurance that came from Sheryl Sandberg, the chief operating officer of Facebook today, part of the great softening up exercise that Facebook is preparing now in advance of chief executive himself, Mark Zuckerberg, appearing before a congressional hearing. Sheryl Sandberg, as his right-hand woman, is doing all the prep work now. And to NPR, she was giving one of her first interviews in a something of a slew of such interviews, basically telling people that, you don't have to worry so much about Facebook after all. We are changing our ways. One of the things that she promised very clearly, and very, very concisely, she said that everyone whose information has been scooped up by Cambridge Analytica, the analysis company that, as we all know now, is taking personal data from Facebook accounts and those of Facebook users' accounts, and of course from the accounts of Facebook users' friends also, not just the ones who had perhaps been in the first rank of scooping, but they did this additional scooping as well, that everyone who is affected in such a way that they find has been affected, they will be informed. We will inform you that your account has been made available, or the information in your account has been made available to Cambridge Analytica. Isn't that reassuring? Her sentence ended at that point. They will be informed.
That's reassuring, actually. It's as reassuring as an additional, coming up with an additional 37 million. You toss that off. If I had an additional million dollars.
That's not quite an accurate number now as they consider discussion of that fact when it's put back to them. They're now saying, or she herself is saying, well, we can't be sure about that. We've said it might be 87 million. It might not. It might be another number entirely. They're still not sure.
Right. And it's the nuance. That's not even nuance. It's the factual aspect of, okay, it might be another number entirely. We are talking about vast numbers. I'm going to digress for 1 second just because the Bank of America thing was interesting in that it shows the deadening effect of, let's just call it, mass data to the mothership.
Volume.
Volume, sure. Okay. Uh-huh. And that is that apparently there was some sort of breach. Fine. And apparently, all of our cards were canceled. Fine. And apparently they were mailing new cards. Fine. However, the only way we found that out was after someone went to try and buy some coffee.
Uh-huh.
And then trying to get to the root of it, because you're always, you know, funneled into an automated system that is designed by the same people who try to sell you stamps in Britain. All right? You just can't get what you want. I'm sorry to be like that, but it's just something that should be a simple transaction is invariably not, you know, it's like if you want the denomination that they have, you're good. If you want anything else, forget about it.
Oh, you're expecting flexibility and
there's that word again.
Consumer choices.
Uh-huh. Oh, my God.
The other word is transparency. Cheryl Sandberg's interview was peppered with that word, transparency. Well, we're going to let you know. We're going to tell you.
Transparency.
What we haven't been telling you so far, we're going to tell you, and you'll know your info, you know, what information we have been sharing and what can be done with it. You're going to know now. Where does that take us?
No place. And that's what's so frustrating. It's a few weeks ago, you and I discussed the word allegation and how that word, the allegation, because everybody, the panels were sitting there throwing the allegation.
Oh, you know, weighted and freighted now beyond its actual meaning.
Right.
Yes.
And transparency is now, it's almost, I'm sorry to use this word, but it's code for, you know, transparency, code for, we will tell you what we want to tell you about that. And we will say we are being transparent. It's like, no. But I just...
Well, it's become, I think the best technical word for it, in terms of linguistic meaning, is it's become a shibboleth. I think that's an appropriate use of the word. It's a kind of password that gets you out of trouble if you're a corporate entity. Say, you just say the word transparency and you're in the clear, to use a kind of a pun.
Yeah, I just am, I'm just... I'm a little bit trying to think of a diplomatic word. I am troubled. I am troubled by a combination of the questions that aren't being asked by people who you know are capable of asking the questions, be it on cable news or elsewhere. And I am troubled at the continued banging away on the partisan side that you are without, there's no assumption there are actually regular functioning human beings who, when their card is canceled, we're going to call Bank of America and stay on the phone until somebody explains what's going on. You know, there is now, it's really seeming as though there's no, where is someone just normal supposed to go and get uncontaminated information?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Regular.
Again, it's a function of sheer volume, isn't it? I mean, where is the filter? Where is the capacity to get things into a manageable scale anymore? Not many places.
And so then you are stuck basically on both sides. You're stuck on one or the other side of the divide. I mean, it's almost visual and philosophical. It's like, well, we are on that side of the river and you're on that side of the river and they blew up the bridge. And I don't know, you know, there used to be commerce, there used to be this, there used to be that, there used to be interaction. And the frustrating thing, just watching this, is the interaction. Interacting with people who might have differing views actually breeds a sort of tolerance and understanding that is missing when you don't have it. But when you don't have it, it becomes harder to just say, well, of course that's what he thinks. Look, he lives next door to me. I know it. You know what I mean? You don't have that sense of, this is perhaps the wrong word for it, but community. And once you lose that, what are you doing? Excuse me, sorry. But
well, it is all very frustrating. Let me just bring in a fresh feeling about maybe just the way things are going and how correctives can be put in place. Perhaps ex post facto, as it were, just only retrospectively, maybe. But there's something. I offer this as a little tiny ray of hope. If you take look at the range of international news that's broken only this morning. We're speaking Friday now, but people may be listening at later days in the week. International news is headed not by American news services. They haven't put this together in this way particularly, but other international news services like Deutsche Welle, who we often refer to from Germany, the BBC, World Service also, Voice of America itself, which doesn't broadcast in America. It's meant to broadcast from America to the rest of the world, interestingly. But three stories come to the fore with extraordinary linkage. Well, it's a very obvious linkage. It's all about presidents, ex-presidents technically, but let's adopt the American courtesy of continuing to call them presidents. President Park in South Korea, jailed for 12 years, for 24 years, I'm sorry, 24 years. In South Africa, President Zuma, ex-President Zuma, just very recently, ex-President Zuma, in jail facing corruption charges that could send him to jail for an unspecified period. In Brazil, ex-President Lula, forced by the Supreme Court not to, excuse me, I'm getting overexcited by this
right. No, it's
retribution
good.
Upon presidents by court systems. But the Supreme Court in Brazil is not allowing him to stay free to fight an appeal against his jail sentence for corruption. All these cases, by the way, involve presidential financial corruption. And he is facing a jail sentence of 12 years. But he's not allowed to appeal against it. From freedom, he's being sent to jail, even while he tries to appeal that case against that sentence against him. I'm not sure that this is any kind of reassurance, but it suggests that maybe somewhere in the world there are judicial systems that take account of the possibility that you can form a corrective to tyrannical behavior by large, powerful figures.
And I think that what is even more heartwarming, if you will, about that.
Only some of us would find it heartwarming. If you're a president or a very strong presidential supporter, I suppose, you might not find it so heartwarming.
Well, here's what is heartwarming. And I was just thinking, is like, because it is a responsibility of an adult, basically, to bring up the next generation and give them useful advice. And I was thinking earlier in the week, as I was just smashing my head against a concrete wall, what would I tell a kid? What would I recommend? And I was struck that it was the same thing probably my great-grandfather would have recommended to his kids. And I would say, go to law school. Learn. No, seriously, I would.
Sure, I'm not laughing at the idea. I'm laughing at the
and how it's come full circle.
Sure, it's a long-standing advice. Yeah,
and I would say
what a realm to turn to for the possibility of refreshing new takes on what's going on. When at the moment we seem to be drenched in legalistic concerns.
Well,
but
the law
offers you a way of entangling people and a way of disentangling.
And we're entrenched, and this goes back to, you know, my constant complaint, you know, because you're banging away at the, you know, this side, and you've got your panel, another word that's taken on, that's giving me PTSD, which is a panel, you know, you've got all of these, it's like a food fight, where everyone is banging away at their angle. And then when you think about the court system, actually, and this is the difference, between the media and the courts. You actually have to present it in a certain way in court. And that is why I would recommend to people that, you know, coming along, it's like, all right, you definitely want to affect change. You need to learn how to do it. And this is a good place to get that.
Yeah, the ancient Greeks would say the pathway is through oratory. But that's not the case nowadays so much as, I mean, America in particular, the pathway could be litigation. But that's for good reason. Remember, we are meant to be, after all, a nation of laws, not of men. The trouble is that rhetoric and legal argument are often so closely overlapping. And there is such a thing also, and cable news channels certainly enforce this notion that there is such a thing as the court of public opinion as well. Nothing to do with facts and proof and case presentation, but sheer rhetoric.
Right.
Often and very fiery and rather thoughtless rhetoric at that.
And here's where I get particularly fussed, because you've created this river and you've blown up the bridges, basically, so you can't get back and forth. But what people don't focus on, and you have to be very weird to focus on that, and come sit next to me, is something, it goes away. You know, 3 weeks ago, if you look back at what was the sheer focus of volume and outrage 3 weeks ago, it's different now. And the I was thinking particularly of the Court of Public Opinion and the kids from Florida. Who are no longer papered, or I shouldn't say papered, plastered all over your screens. And so for people whose attention span, for people who might have lost their, for people whose attention spans have been foreshortened based on the way that they have been encouraged to consume media, and everybody else has, it's, you know, there are a lot of people, you don't sit there and think, my goodness, what happened to that?
Sure.
Or what's the follow-up?
They have been arguing very strongly from their position as frontline survivors, frontline targets themselves, teenagers in school, and the whole matter of arguing for increased gun controls and increased safety for schools in the face of gun violence. But let me quote something from one of the emerging leaders of that movement from Florida, directly from Parkland itself. Emma Gonzalez, is that her name? I'm perhaps forgetting the accurate rendition of her name. But she's 16, and she makes a point that there's so much negative comment upon her generation about them being people with incredibly short attention spans. But she turns the argument around and says, well, look how easily we're brought to the front of attention and then dropped, just as you've been saying, Jill. But what people are perhaps forgetting for the moment is that, yes, we are. We've been conditioned to be young people with short attention spans, but on the other hand, we are extraordinarily adept at getting it. We are, after all, teenagers, she said. We are, after all, teenagers. We know how to get your attention, and we have the phones. So, we're talking about a generation which is pretty sophisticated in terms of its PR, if we can put it that way. I wouldn't say that just because they've been dropped for the moment in the news cycle, as it churns in its inexorable way, I wouldn't be surprised to see them coming forward with more, because this is a very febrile and active center of agitation now.
Right.
I don't want to overemphasize their forcefulness. I mean, who knows where it's going to go? But I don't think there's any shortage of originality in the style of their campaigning. And that's what it's become. It's clearly become a very, very forceful campaign.
At which point, I'm not talking about their campaign, because, you know, best of luck to them and other people who are campaigning for what they believe, for certain things that just flat need to be changed, okay? Sorry, that's my opinion. But what I'm talking about is the coverage of the campaigning and how it runs into the buzzsaw, if you will, the rotating knives of what has been decided by the not great, not good, by the monolith is going to come into your
Your screens. My only point is that they're very adept at making very incisive jabs against
right, and
that
working
monolith.
Around
and
that.
And the monoliths aren't as monolithic as they used to be. That's become very clear.
Right.
I think everyone in the mainstream media and many of the forceful divisions that have grown up, in the world of politics now, the Tea Party forces such as they are. Really taken aback by the emergence of this teen force now. It's none of this is actually monolithic, although clearly very large forces are arrayed.
Right, and repetitive. There is no question that you can get around it and get back on. I think would encourage people to pay it. Don't just drop it when the news cycle drops it.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, I mean, that's
from
an important. That's important. And I'm sure your great-grandfather would have told that to his generations below him, that just because people aren't necessarily taking full notice of you right this minute doesn't mean that you have to retreat in silence. And I don't believe the teenagers of Parkland will do that any more than the mass ranks of agitators for important change across this broad issue of safety and gun violence. They're not going to retreat just because the cable news channels aren't putting them as the lead item now.
Right. All right, what do we got? I'm being told that it's always a pleasure to have you on, and thank you.
But you know that yourself already.
That is true. That is true. So thank you very much. It is always a pleasure to have you on, David Tereshchuk, The Media Beat.
Thank you.